हरि वो पावन हरिनाम संकीर्तन की श्री राधा वृंदावन चंद्र की श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा महारानी की श्री श्री गौर निताय की श्रीनिवास बालाजी की श्रील प्रभुपाद की समवेत भक्त वृंद की ओम अज्ञान तिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुः उन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्णप्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्ने गौरत्विषे नमः हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्तकांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा सो वी वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू फॉर दिस Sunday morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. I have been doing this series on Shaky to Steady Spiritual Life. In first part, see, this is part 4 now. In part 1, these are the things we covered. We discussed about the gradual purification process that happens in Varnashrama, which brings one semblance of devotion, we call it. And by gradually nullifying mamata and ahankar and giving us the understanding of being a servant of God in a very general way, and then bringing us to a point where one can recognize Krishna to be the Supreme Lord, that is a process which happens in many lifetimes. So that is one route, and another route is the path of pure devotion service which Srila Prabhupada gave when he went to the West following in the parampara. And Prabhupada often stresses on one lifetime go back to Godhead. So that was the first one we discussed. And the second one, part 2, we began with that one lifetime approach. Why we have to take that approach? Because Prabhupada has emphasized it very clearly in his purports. And Prabhupada being the founder acharya of ISKCON, we should have faith in him as Krishna's representative. Because the Patha Varnashrama gradually works on nullifying the lust in our heart and purifying our heart. How much am I pure now? Am I pure this much? Am I pure, pure? But the focus is on removal of anarthas. Whereas in the path of pure devotional service, the focus is on awakening love for Krishna. There is a true iron mine and false iron mine. The true iron mine is, I belong to Krishna and Krishna is mine. That is the true identity of the soul. And the perverted or false iron mine is what is generally seen in this world, ahankar and mamakar. Everything belongs to me, everything is meant for my enjoyment. And that takes a very long time, several lifetimes to clear up the ahankar and mamakar. But if one is engaged in bhakti yoga directly, one's identity is completely transformed from the false iron mind to the true iron mind. And then the devotees who achieve pure devotional service after many lifetimes, after being mixed devotees or lesser than that, the quality of that is not the same as those who directly achieve pure devotional service. That was a mention because that was also something which we discussed before. Because they didn't originally come for Krishna. They come for something else. So therefore, there is a very strong recommendation in the Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani based on all Prabhupada's writings that we should always recommend people to take to pure devotional service directly, even though it may be sometimes challenging. And then if we take to the path of pure devotional service, then we can directly begin it by becoming a neophyte devotee. Then the neophyte devotee has many problems, like he thinks the Lord is only in the deity form. He cannot see Krishna, in everything. Krishna says you can actually see Krishna manifesting through prasad, manifesting through devotees, manifesting through the scriptures, manifesting through the holy name, manifesting in various ways. But he thinks my guru is the only Vaishnava and deity form of Krishna is the only deity. He has a very narrow-minded conceptions, and I am also a very advanced devotee like that, neophyte devotee, things like that. But from that stage, due to his critical observation, he finds fault with all Vaishnavas and he is not able to take their association. If he keeps away, he falls down due to maya. If he comes near, he falls down due to offenses. So he is like, either way, it's difficult. Nevertheless, if he is very fortunate, he will stay in the assembly of devotees and not leave the Sangha of devotees. And then when he continues his devotional activities, gradually he will gain advantage. That was the second part. Then this is the third part. So in the third part we talked about all the anarthas. Maya mukdasya jivasya gneyo anarthas chaturvidaha hriddaurbalyam chaparadu asatrishna tatva brahma. So we discussed about those four anarthas and gradual nullification of anarthas in five steps. Yekadeshavartini, Bahudeshavartini, all those things. So anarthanavritti, in order for us to do anarthanavritti, we have to know about the anarthas. And offenseless chanting of the holy name destroys anarthas, but it is not very easy to do offenseless chanting in that stage. So there is a gradual nullification of anarthas. And then there was a lot of talk about association of devotees. There is Kanishtha, Madhyama, Uttama Adhikaris and the Uttama Adhikaris Association. How it is very purifying and elevating. And one should take advantage. And even if neophytes are unsuccessful and they fall away, then they will gradually come back. But if they don't fall away, they stick on somehow with devotees and gradually give up the critical outlook, then they may come to the point of commitment, of initiation. And if they become committed, initiated devotees, then their bhajana kriya starts after that. Then the bhajana kriya will in the early stages take them through unsteady and then eventually steady. After anarthanavritti is over, they come to steady. Before anarthanavritti it is? Before and during anarthanavritti it is called unsteady. Yeah. So then you had mentioned that, you know, some people are initiated, but even after getting initiated, they are very like normal people only. There's not much difference. And that is because they have not been offered Sambandhangyan, Abhidhayangyan and Prayojanangyan. And they have not taken the spiritual life very seriously. Now, that point will be elaborated in today's session. We are going to the fourth part. Erratic behaviors to be rectified in unsteady bhajan kriya. Where is Mansundar Prabhu? Give the mic to him.
First, core prescribed duties to rid ourselves of anarthas that Srila Prabhupada gave for practical engagement of devotees. Srila Prabhupada introduced a core of prescribed duties such as public harinam, book distribution and preaching, sandwiched between morning and evening programs of chanting and hearing before the deities. The strict regimen would steady his followers by giving them the best opportunity to free themselves of unwanted habits.
Yeah, one reason it will make us steady is because Prabhupada gave it. He is a pure devotee, he knows what we need. So if we simply stick to Prabhupada faithfully, I have met many devotees who may be very neophyte and immature in their speech and behavior oftentimes, but because they have been strictly sticking to this program that Prabhupada gave, they are going on, and they are joyful in spiritual life for decades also. There are people like that. They say, Prabhupada said it. Prabhupada said we should go on Harinam. Prabhupada said we should do the morning program. Prabhupada said, Prabhupada sandwich program. Prabhupada said, distribute my books. They are doing it. And they can go on. They don't seem to have many problems in life. They are just going on simply because of sticking to the words of the Acharya. Even though they may be having some neophyte tendencies, they may not be very refined in behavior or anything. But at least spiritual life is very nicely going on. Most important thing. So one thing that he says here is that the followers, it will steady Prabhupada's followers and give them the opportunity to further progress and nullify the unwanted habits and everything. So in the previous lecture, if you remember, I was telling you two things about what is expected from a guru towards the disciple. One is the guru should give Sambandhangyan, Abhidhayangyan and Prayojanangyan. Enlighten the disciple thoroughly about what is he getting into. He's getting into relationship with Krishna. He wants to retire from Maya's company, enter into Krishna's company. So that should be the goal of life of a disciple who is taking initiation. Initiation should not be given for any other purpose. Initiation is not some auspicious ritual. There are many family members who come on the initiation day, and getting initiated brings all his colleagues also from office sometimes and in the neighborhood that I am getting initiated. In India, getting initiated is sometimes a famous ritual. They are going to get a new name and Maharaji will give them a mala, and they think like that. It's performed as a big ritual, but then subsequently after that ritual is over, life becomes as normal as before. That is not what initiation is supposed to be. So first thing, the expectation is guru should enlighten the disciple about Sambandhangyan. Once the disciple is awakened to that Sambandhangyan, then only he should initiate, number one. Number two, the guru should also offer a series of training and education programs for application of the philosophy that he taught in day-to-day life. For example, Prabhupada gave his books. After reading books, what you should do? Distribute books, do Harinam Sankirtan, do the whole morning program, isn't it? And evening program, and then deity worship, isn't it? And then follow the 64 principles given by Rupa Goswami. And then varieties of services inside the four walls of the temple and outside, making life membership program and all that. So Prabhupada gave theory and practical both. So guru is supposed to give these two things to the disciples very clearly, without any ambiguity. If you say, I am a Hare Krishna devotee, these are the symptoms of a Hare Krishna devotee. But over the years, we observed that after Prabhupada left the planet, in some of the places we find that actually devotees hardly go out to make life members, to distribute books, to preach. People are sitting within four walls. Actually, this tendency Prabhupada observed earlier also in some of the mathas and all. He saw you know, growing beard in Chaturmas time, eating only once a day, you know, and playing harmonium and just singing, doing bhajan without doing some book distribution and preaching and reaching out the message. So Prabhupada has observed it. Why did he start this con separately, separate from Gaudiya Math? This is the reason. Because he found that the mood and mission of Gaudiya Math was not in line with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Some of the sannyasis criticized Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, saying that he has a Bhagavatam in one hand and chopper on the other. And they all fell down, Prabhupada says. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's preaching mood was captured by who? Srila Prabhupada. So he wanted to keep the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur intact, so he started this con society. And then now Prabhupada left, then again the same old problem is repeating. When Prabhupada left, then afterwards, you know, whatever things that he emphasized are gradually becoming forgotten. So they had shown one picture of our Kaunteya Prabhu. 1977, Prabhupada is prominently present. Then he is saying 10 years later, Prabhupada's picture is fading. Now practically it is not seen. Like that he had made. Basically what they mean is his emphasis, his instructions, his teachings. And that is only possible if people are living it. And like the, what he has emphasized, those who are living it and those who are transmitting it and those who are accepting it and those who are applying it. So it's the duty of the guru to hand over both theory and practical both. And read further.
It is up to the devotees to avail themselves of Prabhupada's perfect arrangement. Some do and some do not. To those who neglect the Acharya's training, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, one who is lazy in properly understanding the Vaishnava philosophical conclusions can never become free from anarthas, the unwanted bad habits and philosophical misconceptions that impede devotional service. He can never render actual service to the Lord. Prakrita Rasashat Dushani.
Yeah. Some people started interpreting, you know, things that Prabhupada gave. You know, they said, who said, you know, we have to go on Harinam? Prabhupada said in India that if you go on Harinam, people throw coins. So he told them to stop that and start a life membership program. See, that is not a standard. That is only in one instance in Calcutta. In Calcutta, when they, because in Calcutta, you will find in trains also people carrying a mic and singing Hareksha Mantra and taking some coins. So Prabhupada thought in Calcutta people, beggars also use Mahamantra for making money there. So there he said, okay, make life membership. So somebody who is lazy to go on Harinam can say that Prabhupada said like this. So misapplying Prabhupada's teachings. You understand, no? Actually Prabhupada didn't say Harinam should be stopped all over the world and everywhere only life membership should be started. Did he ever say that? So if somebody doesn't want to follow Prabhupada, they can say anything they want, any damn thing. Correct, no? Similarly, reaching out Prabhupada books, some other people started saying that so many books have gone all over the world, but where are the devotees? That means what do they imply? They imply that by distributing books, you don't make devotees. That's what they are implying. So does it not go against Acharya's work, Acharya's preaching? Actually, you will see when you have a, you know, vessel of water, we keep it on the top of a gas stove. In the beginning, although you are putting fire, Jaya Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki, when the fire is put at the bottom, immediately you will not see any effect. But you persist, keep on heating it. After some time, some bubbles will come. And then keep on heating it. And gradually, you know, the water will start boiling. The whole vessel will be boiling. And Prabhupada noticed it. He said that the communist people, they were giving out chits in the beginning. Then they gave out small booklets. Then they started giving bigger books. So through the literature, the communism was spread all over the world. So Prabhupada was very convinced that, you know, we may not be able to reach to every door, but the spiritual literature can reach to everybody. So if it goes into every window, every door, people will read it and they will get awakened. And if we don't give them spiritual literature, somebody else will substitute us. Mayavadis, you know, materialistic people, they supply so much literature. And that becomes the only literature for the people. And they don't have anything spiritual to hear. Keeping this in mind, Prabhupada started Back to Godhead, which he called as the backbone of ISKCON. And then he also printed the books which he wanted to reach. So immediately effect won't be seen, but gradually effect will come in decades. Like Russia, you see, in those years His Holiness Hariketh Swami, you know, had many buses going distributing, and there were not many devotees, you know, books were going out, and therefore some leaders were criticizing, saying that so many books have gone in Russia, where are the devotees? But now Russia has one of the maximum devotees. There are more than 84 centers, I heard. When they do like Pune Yatra, which we do, 15,000, 16,000 devotees come. 15,000 devotees come, yeah, in Russia. So Russia, Ukraine, Moscow, you will see these places. So the effect is gradually seen over a period of time. So one should not forego the instructions of the Acharya or talk against it. So that's what he is saying here. Some do and some do not. Some people follow and some don't follow what Prabhupada has given. So then if we don't take the practical engagement that is prescribed for us, then the anarthas will multiply. And it will be very difficult to clean the anarthas. And this process is a very subtle process, and it has to be done very diligently, very carefully. So that's why I gave the heading. Read the heading again.
Core prescribed duties to rid ourselves of anarthas that Srila Prabhupada gave for practical engagement of devotees.
Yeah. The beauty of this kind of program is book distribution, in case anybody can go, even a newcomer can go. But otherwise, if you are unable to go, there is some service in temple, no problem, that day service can be done. It is a very flexible, adjustable service, Harinam, book distribution, these kind of things. It's not like a weekly preaching program. If you have a weekly fixed preaching program, you can't cancel it. Correct, no? Whereas book distribution, Harinam, life membership making, visiting big shots, these are all things which can be adjusted. So Prabhupada had come up with a very good plan of giving engagement. So one time Prabhupada told the devotees that in the Vedic times, the boys would be asked to go and beg alms, you know, go home to home, Babadi Bhikshandehi, like that. But now if you go to America, go to your housing colony and bat the door, Babadi Bhikshandehi, they won't understand. You know, this fellow is coming and asking, begging for money. And then Prabhupada coined this new plan that you give them a book and take a donation. And that is equivalent to begging, he said. That's equivalent to begging. So brahmacharis are not doing this. They are not giving a book, giving a donation. I mean, giving a book and taking a donation. That means they are falling short of one of the dharmas. What is that? The brahmachari going out on behalf of guru and begging the alms from the people. And begging alms makes us humble. But if we don't do that work, we only give preaching. We only just give lectures. Then, you know, that is going to have a difficulty in awakening humility in us. We may be thinking that because money comes easily, you know, people give donations, it comes. So we don't actually make an effort going door to door, begging people to take Prabhupada's books and accepting a donation from them and coming. So Prabhupada had made equivalent of a Vedic Gurukula to modern this thing. Another thing Prabhupada said, that all the things that we collect, money, everything should be given to the temple, and whatever temple provides, one should accept happily without making demands. That is sadhu's life. And Prabhupada said about simplicity. So Prabhupada found out how to implement a Vedic Gurukula in the modern context. Now our people don't implement the things that Prabhupada said and then say, oh, Brahmacharya Ashrama is so bad, so let us start small Gurukula with small kids. They are more submissive. Start from the beginning and then you cultivate them. No. Modern day Brahmacharya Ashram can be as wonderful as Vedic Gurukula, provided people follow what Prabhupada says. Very simple. It can be as perfect as that.
Second,
yeah.
The serious duty of gurus and disciples. Therefore, it is a duty of the spiritual master to give his disciples knowledge of relationship, practice and perfection. And it is a duty of the disciples.
So that's the same ones. Relationship is sambandha, practice is avideya, and perfection is prayojan. Those three things are said, yeah.
And it is the duty of the disciple to embrace and apply these teachings. If gurus and disciples perform their duties properly, they will both advance in the Lord's service. If, however, they neglect these duties, then both guru and disciples will suffer the consequences. By committing such an offense to the holy name, they will each fall from their position. Devotees may be surprised to hear that spiritual masters are punishable if they do not adequately perform their duties. But this is the teaching of Shastra. Vaishnavas who collect disciples but fail to ensure their dependents' spiritual welfare are certainly sinners. The ninth offense to the holy name is to teach the glories of the holy name to the faithless. Padma Puran, Brahma Khand. The converse of this injunction is that one must teach the glories of the name to the faithful.
So, those people who come to this moment and to become initiated or to become committed, either congregation members or brahmacharis, so they are counted as faithful. And other people who are not interested in buying our books, not interested in coming and taking this philosophy seriously, they may not have faith, so we don't preach to the faithless. If you preach to the faithless, it is ninth offense, isn't it? You don't tell the lofty glories of Radharani or holy names to the, you know, faithless people. At the same time, he says that those who have put faith in Prabhupada's mission and they have come here and they want to get initiated, to initiate people into the movement and not give them spiritual shelter, he says here, is extremely deadly, dangerous, both for the guru and the disciple. Now this I wish to explain a little bit. Like say one of your friend wants 1 lakh rupees. So one of your boys want 1 lakh rupees for paying the college fee because his home, you know, there was some serious financial crunch in his home. So you are a senior man. So another boy, you know, who has extra money, he is ready to give this boy 1 lakh. But then he tells the request that if Prabhuji says, I will give. Correct, no? So then they both come to you. And then you know that they both are your kids only, you know, you have been cultivating them. In the 2-3 years you know them. Then you say, oh, he is a very good boy, you can give, no problem. So he gives 1 lakh to him. And that boy had promised that within 2 months he'll give back. But he hasn't given back in 2 months. Now 6 months have passed, 1 year has passed, he's not giving. So this boy will catch whom? He'll catch me only. He will not go to him. Because he knows that you are a truthful man, you are very honest. So you are called guarantor for that money. Now imagine that other boy became weak in spiritual life, slowly started moving out. And he is not respecting you also. He took the 1 lakh rupees, after that he misspent the money and then he is not respecting you. Finally, who will have to pay that 1 lakh? I will have to pay. Because I recommended. If I am actually a truthful man, then I will have to pay. Because I got into a complex situation. I may say that, Prabhu, when I recommended you to give him, at that time he was very good. Now he has become spoiled. Now he is not listening to me, what to do? So can you please adjust? How will you adjust? Putting trust in you, he gave that amount to him. So in material world, money transaction, land transaction involves trust. One another example I'll tell you, you'll understand. In the camp temple, there was in those days one devotee working in the temple. He was very fond of making a movie on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he is a very simple devotee. Actually, you all know very well. Suman Prabhu, yeah. Very simple devotee, very nice devotee. He used to come to me several times and say that, Prabhu, I want to make a movie on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so sweet, whole world should know about him. I told him, your desire and dream is very good, but you are not the person who can do it. Then I gave him, you know, phone number of Ujjain, his own as Bhakti Prem Maharaj, Bhakti Charu Maharaj. I told him, you should go and meet them. His own as Bhakti Charu Maharaj has done this thing, Abhay Charan. He can easily do this movie. Actually, he went and came also once. He said, and then one day, one gentleman was waiting after my Bhagavatam class to meet me. Then immediately after the class, that gentleman came and said, Radheshyamji, I am a movie director and I have done dozens of movies. So he told me all the names of movies as if they are very popular movies, which I was not so familiar actually. But he said, it's known. Worldwide it's known. And then the man said, I just want one hint from you. And then he said, oh, you are one of your gentlemen in ISKCON. He says, he's your man only. He wants me to invest 1 crore rupees in making a movie for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I am not going to take much of your time. I have money with me, ready with me right now. You say yes and I'll give him, he said. Then he asked, who is that man? Then he made a phone call and that gentleman came. Who was it? Oh, this fellow, my Lord, I was shocked. I said, I can write a bond and give you that you should not give him. I said, he is a very innocent, simple fellow. His desire is very good, but he can't. I told him to go to Maharaj. Such a senior people who can do the movie. One who is capable should do it. Correct, no? And then this gentleman told me, immediately he left, in 5 minutes he left, I gave him Prasad. He said, Swamiji, this is why I told him that take me to someone responsible. But he told me that our president is too busy, and I have put a word to him about the movie, you can give me, like that he had told him. And he didn't give. Thank God he didn't give. He approached me. So you understand the seriousness of what it means to be a guarantor? Correct, no? Because that gentleman is a smart fellow, he understood. If he involves me, he told me, you are a post holder, you have been around for many years here. If that fellow may run away, but you will not run, you are here. You know, I can catch you. So, in the same manner, those who are giving initiations, gurus, they can be caught by Krishna. Because on the day of initiation, the gurus, they are taking the disciple and handing them over to Krishna. Krishna has no relationship with the candidate, but he has only trust in the guru. So he says to Guru that because you are giving him, I accept. How many of you have experience that you don't know some X, Y, Z fellow in some city? You are going through, say, Bangalore, Hyderabad, somewhere. I am telling you, this is the number, you call him and he will give you prasadam. Correct, no? How many of us have even accepted prasadam packet without knowing the name of the person? Is it important for you to know the name? Because who is recommending is very important. Somebody else may put something else and give also, correct, no? Isn't it? So, the recommending person is known to us. Therefore, one who is taking the role of a guru has a very vital role, and he says that, and this is one reason why we should not increase the number of people in our shelter. If we increase many people and say that, see, the more you have people under you, the more you get a kick, the more you get joy, that, you know, oh, I am able to influence so many people, and so many are touched by my association and things like that. But there is also danger. Because one time in my special master's room, few devotees had come. So one congregation member had come to complain about one brahmachari that, Maharaj, he started preaching in our village. Now there are 50, 60 people. And now suddenly he is giving up the preaching and he want to start some city preaching now. And Maharaj called the brahmachari and said, how can I do this? If you started a program, you have to make sure, if you don't want to do, somebody else should do. And he said, no, Maharaj, I started, now there are few devotees, there are 40, 50, but they are all villagers, you know, neither can they, you know, come to city, it's far away from the city, and they can't give donation also, and they are all just followers. I want to preach in city and make some very nice group. And Maharaj said, see, this is like begetting children and throwing them in the street. Like that he said. And not attending to the children which you begot. I was shocked when I heard this. Really? If you preach somewhere and make some devotees and you are unavailable for them, whenever they call you, you cut the phone, you are unavailable for them. It is exactly like what? Like creating babies and throwing in the street. Maharaj said, you have initiated their spiritual life. They have Shraddha and the path. They want to chant, they want to grow. You can't just drop them. You have to take responsibility for them. Otherwise, you have to arrange someone else on your behalf who will actually take them forward. So, whether you are a Shiksha Guru, you are a Diksha Guru, whatever you be, it becomes our responsibility. If somebody is thinking that they are in our shelter, but if we are not giving them shelter, we have to clearly tell them, Prabhu, you know, I won't be able to, you better approach, the local authority or something. This is one reason why His Holiness Gopakrishna Maharaj always says that anybody in any part of the world, he will tell them to go to the local temple on Sundays. He will tell them, go to the temple, you know, take part in the temple events, and also to go for the Mangalarati and do book distribution. Why he is saying that? Because we don't have the ability to take care of everybody everywhere. We have to connect them to the local temple. So we have to offer them spiritual support and ensure that they learn the theory well and they do the practical well. Both they have to do. Otherwise he says, I have not added or subtracted any word here. You can see what Maharaj says. You know, spiritual masters are punishable if they do not adequately perform their... This is not only spiritual master means, it not only means the Diksha Guru. Anyone who is accepting somebody in their custody and not offering them proper training, proper shiksha, as well as practical duties, then they are punishable, yeah. Next one. Yeah.
Third, who can become a spiritual master? Who cannot? Gurus who collect disciples but fail in their duty to train them are offenders to both the holy name and the disciplic succession. Parampara. Quotations in support of this conclusion. If a guru, disregarding the standard for giving diksha, gives the mantra to his disciple out of greed or mundane affection, he along with that disciple is cursed by the gods. Snehadva lobato vapiyo grahiniyad dikshaya.
Tasmin guru sashishye tad devata shapa apatet. He is saying that the gods curse them, that this fellow has taken this disciple out of greed for money or mundane affection because they happen to be from their will and their birthplace or their bodily relationships. So for example, if some guru is giving diksha just because somebody has given a lot of money, it's a big donor, even without following four regs they give them, or if somebody is their distant relative or from their native place or they speak their language, some kind of affection is there for them, or they may be family members of their disciple. For example, so I have a ex-disciple and the ex has 2-3 sons and daughters. They want to take diksha and this person I love very much. So I assume that his children may be very good because he is a serious devotee. Then I give them initiation, but they don't chant only. They throw away the bead bag. Then it will tantamount to sin. Clear, no? Yeah. Yes.
One who cannot deliver his dependence from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod.
You know the famous verse, Guru na sasyat, Svajana na sasyat, Pita na sasyat, Janani na sasyat, Daivam na tatsyat, Na patishta sasyat, Na mocheyet, Yat samupetam ratyam. Na mocheyet means if they cannot deliver their dependence. That means who can become spiritual master? One who is committed to delivering that disciple can become spiritual master. And who cannot? You know, one who is simply attracted by mundane affection or by greed, they cannot become spiritual masters and accept candidates for initiation. That's the point here. So the first line is the most important. That is, one should not collect disciples and fail in the duty to train them. Then if people have collected disciples but they are not training, that leads to offense, he says. Yeah. Next one.
Who can become a spiritual master, who cannot?
Yeah.
Accepting disciples is no different from any other service, in that it must be done properly. Thakur Bhaktivinod writes, if without paying heed to Lord Chaitanya's instruction, a guru initiates an insincere pretender, he commits a grievous offense for which he goes to hell.
For example, sometimes you need some government sanction. Say there are so many people opening schools and everything. If you go to the government authorities, sometimes they postpone. So the government authorities may, somebody in that office may say, you just give, you know, some 1 lakh rupee or 2 lakh rupee and I know the right people. I will turn the files and then I will get the sanction. And then if you are innocent, you may hand over the 1 lakh, 2 lakh rupees to him and he will take the money and run away. So money is also gone and sanction also didn't come. Correct, no? It has happened like that. In some cases it has happened, yeah. Therefore, before you give money, you will naturally ensure that whom am I giving the money? Is it trustworthy? Do I know him personally? Or is somebody recommending him? So the money transaction, land transaction, property transaction, all these things we do with utmost care. Correct, no? You don't offer big amounts of money or big quantity of land and papers loosely, freely to anybody. If you are really a man with level-headed man, you know, when you are handling such things. Therefore, what is most involved? Even when you go to a doctor, people just don't go to any doctor in India, traditionally. Whom do they go to? Which doctor they go to? They will go to that doctor who is recommended by a relative. If a relative is recommended, because they have trust in the relative, if they recommend a doctor only, then they will go. They will not just go to any Tom, Dick and Harry. So in the same manner he is saying here, accepting disciples is no different from any other such services. He says that without paying heed, if somebody initiates an insincere pretender, He commits a grievous offense for which he goes to hell. Which means, once my spiritual master was in the car, me and Gauranga Prabhu were sitting behind. So while just talking to him, Gauranga Prabhu said, "Maharaj, the list is increasing more and more, you know, and the initiations are not happening. The devotees are very worried." And Maharaj said, "Yeah, we will see, we will see," he said. And then Maharaj said, "So you have made a list to give me?" And then Maharaj asked him a question, turned around and asked him a question. "Are you ready to take their karma if they commit blunders?" He asked. And he was shocked. "Maharaj, I heard Guru takes the karma." Because they put the banana in the fire. So Guru takes the karma. And Maharaj said, "You see, I don't know them, who they are. And how am I accepting them? Why am I accepting them? By your recommendation. Because you are recommending, I have full trust in you, but not in them. So, then you also only should recommend those fellows in whom you have full trust." He said, "Maharaj, I thought that some of these guys are not proper guys. I thought if I hand them over to you, you will take care." He said, No. If they are not proper guys, you cannot hand over. You only can give me those fellows in whom you have full trust." And then Maharaj said, "Actually, the people who are bringing people to me, they should be ready to share the karma. Only then you should bring them to me." And then he said, "Maharaj, in that case, we have to reduce the list. List cannot be so long." Isn't it? So later on, me and Gaurampu had a long discussion about this karma theory of people whom you bring. So Gaurampu used to often say that when you are bringing people to the spiritual master, we often think that even if he has a little bit shortcoming, you know, he's a great soul, he will take care. He said, "No, you have to bring people who will really be committed when they are taking initiation." One time they did a research on who are the people initiated till now and how many people are still alive in Krishna consciousness and how many people are not to be seen, or they may be seen only during Pune Yatra and such occasions. Yatra time, suddenly you see them. Other times you don't see them. So they made a list, they did this. And it's a very good work actually, even we can do that. Make a list of all initiated devotees and see who is still alive. Somebody is not alive, go and kindle them on behalf of the spiritual master and bring them back to life. Our Gopachampa was doing it here, correct? Getting some of the older devotees who are missing. So you will see that, because it is in the interest of the guru to protect those people whom he has initiated. So he is saying that without paying heed to the instructions, a guru should not initiate insincere practitioner. It is like giving 2 lakh rupees, 5 lakh rupees to a cheater. You give the money, you can be sure that the money will never come back and job will not be done. It's like that. Go ahead.
The nama pradhas committed by the charlatan disciple slowly but surely diminishes the guru's spiritual potency.
My Lord, have you heard that? Just say, yeah.
And finally, the guru is ruined. This offense has a devastating effect on both the guru and the disciple, who must both enter hell.
See, Arnab Chitamani says, actually, guru didn't do any mistake, but still he goes to hell. Why? Because the disciple has pulled him down from that position. Now, I'll tell you some examples for this. You can see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Jayavijaya behaved angrily with 4 Kumaras, and then Lord Vishnu came to the door, entrance. Lord told Kumaras that actually, since my servants have committed the mistake of mistreating you, you know, then I have to be blamed. Because they are my servants only. And then he also told that if a servant does not behave appropriately as per the expectations of the master and brings disgrace to the master, then such a servant is like a leprosy on the face of the master. Imagine if somebody has leprosy patches, does it look good? So such a servant is like that, like a leprosy patch in the body. Lord gave this example. And then he said, since they have committed the blunder of mistreating you, if you wish, I can lop off my 2 arms. Which means, I am not only just saying the theory, I am ready to take the punishment also, the Lord said. I am ready to take the punishment. So which means, the mistake of the servant ultimately goes to the master. So the master is also made a responsible man for the mistake of the servant. You will see in any part of the world, if an ISKCON devotee behaves well, does some good work, what's the first question people ask? Who is displeasing? And if a person is creating headache, creating lot of problem, you know, and his name is initiated devotee, they see that he is dash das, like that. There are some fellows who take initiation to get authorization and authenticity within ISKCON, and then they create lot of trouble. Lot of, and they actually make a big card with a visiting card name and everything, I am initiated devotee, and then many of them are doing, you know, there are people doing vastu, there are people who are driving ghosts, there are people who are temple construction, and there are people who are doing jyotish, there are people doing yoga, but they are putting the das next to their name, gives them lot of weight in many Hare Krishna innocent devotees in trusting them. Do you agree? How many of you, if you see the name Das in a card, your trust will boost up immediately? Correct, no? You say, Prabhu is an initiated devotee in ISKCON, Prabhu. He can't be a fraud. People say, no? So your weight increases. And as soon as you put a Das or Devi Dasi, you know, that name DD is there. Immediately people trust like that. So some fellows may not be up to the mark as a proper disciple, but they may want the name for what? Huh?
Recognition.
For increasing their weight, for increasing their authenticity. And they can say, I am disciple of such and such guru. They can use the guru for their business, expansion of the business. So that's what he is saying here. And such a fellow may be committing a lot of namaparadhas. Like for example, people who may do business and other things in an inappropriate way, cheating way and all that, if they are initiated disciples, so it will bring a lot of bad name to guru. Correct, no? So, therefore, he is saying that then such a person actually brings lot of bad reputation as well as bad account to the guru also. One place Prabhupada says one another thing, that a guru who initiates a disciple, who is regularly breaking regulative principles, he is having illicit connection with women and he is doing such wrong things, you know, then the guru also gets bad dreams, Prabhupada says. And guru can also get diseases in his body because of that. Once Prabhupada said, why am I getting sick? Because you guys are not following the four regs, as Prabhupada said once. You will read that in the book, Spiritual Master and Disciple. There are many quotes about that. That means the ill behavior of the disciple causes disease and dreams for the guru. And similarly, the namaparadhas committed by the disciple diminishes guru's potency. That means, you know, those whom we are giving shelter, we have to be very careful. Otherwise, we have to cut them off, tell them that you are not my disciple anymore, and we have to declare it. This person is not in my custody. So his activities, I am not responsible for. Like disowning, as we say. Like for example, once a boy was cheating the father, and father wasn't aware. He would go to his friend's place, and he would play cards for his friend. And then he was making lot of money and his friend was very happy. One day his friend gave him a t-shirt. The boy wore a t-shirt and came. Father asked, Beta, you are wearing a t-shirt? Who gave you this? And then he said, my friend gave Papa. And father said, why are you taking free things from friends? You know, I am here to give you whatever you want. You know? And then the father saw he's not studying well. He's going to his friend's place repeatedly. And then I asked him, why are you not studying? He said, I am going to study only there. But then later on the boy thought, I am making so much money through gambling now. Why to work for my friend? I will do gambling on my own. He started doing gambling on his own and making lakhs of rupees. Then he started taking lakhs of rupees from home. And the father came to understand, Beta, you can't do this. You will bring lot of money, but you will lose 10 times more money. But then the father locked up all the bureau and everything. Then the boy went to bank and took father's money from the bank, 5 lakh, 10 lakh like that. Then the father sealed the bank account also, so he cannot touch it. Then the boy started going to father's friend's circle, saying that my father told me to take 5 lakh from you, 2 lakh from you, and they were giving also. Then the father declared in newspaper, I disown this son. If any of you give money, you can give money at your own risk. He is no more my son. He is a cheater. He is not following me. He has gone astray now. He is no more my son. So in the same manner, we may sometimes see that some people become so-called disciples, but they don't listen to the instructions of the Guru and they act independently. And the other way, then the Guru should declare, this fellow is not following, he has gone crazy, he has gone mad, he is no more my disciple. Both Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did this in certain events. They said, he is not my disciple. Openly they declared it. You will see one Prabhupada's letter to the disciples, such and such a leader of their community, you know, he is doing something independent and don't follow him. You know, he is telling you to do many things opposite to what I have told you. So don't follow him. It's a letter is there in Shikshamrita, Prabhupada's written. So he has declared that he has become disconnected, independent, don't follow him. So therefore he is saying, if one doesn't do that, you maintain the connection, then his actions bring disgrace, ill repute, all these problems to Guru also. Yeah. Yes.
Be patient to study about anarthas and solutions. To pass through the clouds of pernicious habits to the clear sky of effortless devotion service, one has to examine more closely the stage of unsteady devotion in practice, its relation to unwanted habits, old and new, and the process by which devotees overcome these habits.
Yeah. Sometimes devotees feel, oh, this is too technical. You know, Yakadesha Vartani, Bahudesha Vartani, Prayiki, Atyantiki, Purna, and all these things, you know. So, studying about, you know, Ganatarala, Vyudavikal, people think, oh, this is too scientific, too technical, you know. Like once we were having a discussion on how the jiva gets bhakti. Is it through Shubha Karma? Is it through Kripa? You know, what is this thing? So, one boy was asking, Prabhu, is it really important to research this? Somehow we got bhakti in our life. You devoted one full hour for this, Prabhuji. In our mind is spinning now. So some people are not very enthusiastic about knowing how the jiva gets bhakti, or how the jiva further advances going through anartha nivritti. And he was asking, Prabhuji, can you take prasadam now? That's the easiest program in bhakti yoga. But understanding these steps is very important, because we all do go through these steps. When you are going through these steps, if you don't understand it, then we won't be able to clear that stage and go to the higher stage. Yeah, go ahead.
Devotees should not ignore these aspects of the practical application of devotional knowledge, abhideya jnana, thinking them too detailed or trifling. At the stage of unsteady practice, only a few aspects of a devotee's behavior are spiritualized or freed from the sense of I-ness and minus. For instance, beginners sometimes feel themselves servants by developing an affinity for the temple deity or by identifying with the Vaishnava society such as ISKCON.
For example, even grihasthas also, some of them are very humble and very simple, very sincere. They may say that, you know, Prabhu, I am rendering service on every Friday or every Saturday I come to temple. I got this particular seva. They are very joyful in telling others that I come to Balaji seva or I come to Muntavan Chandra seva, you know. Some of them wash the plate, some of them serve the prasad, you know, some of them are distributing books, some of them are assisting in a program. So, and they identify with the local deities, and even when they travel, they keep some photo of the deity. So, they identifying with the local temple, with the local deity, local devotees, and local service, so which is a very nice thing. So, that means their I-ness is becoming what? Spiritualized. So that part is becoming spiritualized, which is very good. Go ahead.
But despite this budding sentiment to perform service, selfish habits and attitudes continue to dominate their lives.
This is only a budding sentiment. They may say that I love these deities very much, I am serving them, my Guru Maharaj has given me service. But there is a budding sentiment, but then there are selfish habits and attitudes, which we will be studying about now, they continue to dominate. Yeah.
They struggle with the oppressive influences of false identity and false proprietorship, like weak swimmers who tread water to keep from sinking.
If any of you don't know swimming, and first time, you know, you catch the chain or something, I just flap the legs behind, correct, no? But you find, you know, inevitably you keep on drowning again and again. You are not able to keep yourself in the top. Because you are not used to swimming. The beginning practice is like that. That's why he's calling us weak swimmers. Similarly, in the path of spiritual life also, you know, we may have some devotional sentiments, you know, sometimes, occasionally that feeling will come. But most often our anarthas take over. and very strongly make us sense gratifiers in becoming greedy for eating a lot, in sleeping a lot, and recreating a lot. And we identify more with material roles, material upadhis, than with our identity as Krishna servant, devotee servants. There are many people who they will come, "Prabhu, I am servant of your servants. How can I serve you?" They will ask. In 5 minutes later, they will be yelling, yelling and shouting. Then where is the sentiment gone? So it's very easy to speak with the mouth. We may speak with the mouth or even have a thought, but actually those budding sentiments are very superficial at this stage. Therefore, one has to study about the anarthas and watch oneself, and then go beyond those stages.
Yeah. Those who want to be steady must defeat the 5 enemies. Yeah. Even though such devotees want to be steady, the influence of past habits obstructs their desire. Those among them who are properly determined certainly succeed, but before they do must defeat 5 enemies: sleep, laya, destruction, vikshepa, disinterest, apratipati, behavior unbecoming of a Vaishnava, shaya, and the taste of material enjoyment,
kashaya,
and the taste of material enjoyment, rasaswad.
Now all those 5 are explained now. Yeah.
Sleep is the influence of ignorance that engulfs devotees while they chant their rounds, hear Bhagavatam class, and concentrate on the Gayatri Mantra.
3 times, yeah, 3 things. Chanting Japa and Bhagavatam class and Gayatri Mantra. So in the Madhurya Kadambini it is said, from the Kirtana, congregational chanting of the holy name, and then Bhagavatam and Japa, the sleep will be in increasing order. That means one is very easily likely to be sleepy in Japa most, and then less in Bhagavatam class, and least in dancing kirtan. I don't know how you can sleep while dancing. It'll be difficult. Some people can lean on the wall and sleep. Little difficult. So he has included one more here, Gayatri Mantra also, which is like Japa. Yeah. So that type of laya or the sleepiness also is due to anarthas. Yeah. Go ahead.
Distraction is the tendency to engage in activities unrelated to devotional practice, such as idle talk while chanting Japa.
Yeah. When we have a distraction, vikshepa, that means we supervise others during chanting. Who is walking, who is sitting, who is peeping outside, who has gone away, who is coming late, who is chanting with what quality, that person has slept off, this person is hallucinating. So we keep thinking about others, except who's chanting? Our own chanting. So this is how we get distraction. And also, if somebody's mobile, beep, sound is coming, then immediately one checks one's mobile, no? Did I get a call? Oh, not in my mobile, maybe in his mobile. That means one is eager to be distracted, willing to be distracted. I am available, Prabhu. So anybody want to distract me? Like that, yeah. So this distraction of things unrelated to devotional practice. Yeah, go ahead. And also idle talk, he is saying. Talking while half mala is over, hands are like this, and then there are people who fold the chatai along with this also. They are keeping the hand also like this, and they talk also.
Distraction is that indifference refers to the indolence that obstructs concentration even when one is neither drowsy nor distracted.
Indifference means you are not feeling sleepy, nor are you distracted by anything, but there is no taste in chanting. One thinks it's a punishment today that I have to sit here for 2 hours and I have to chant. One has no taste at all. One is wide awake and there is no distraction. Everything is calm, cool, collected. But one's mind is not willing to perform the austerity of chanting and getting purified. One is reluctant for purification. Just like you will see sometimes morning time when a child has woken up from the bed. And the mother takes the child to the bathroom, right? And she puts some lukewarm water and then bathes the child. But the child, generally the children are lazy for bathing. You've seen that? Nobody likes to be taken to bathroom and put water is put and then cleansed. Similarly, sometimes we are not ready for getting purified by chanting. Even though there is no sleep, there is no distraction. Somehow, so that is the stage of the third one he is saying, yeah, indifference, yeah. Audasinitaya. Yes.
Unbecoming behavior refers to un-Vaishnava-like traits such as lust, anger, greed and pride.
Yeah. So, improper, these tendencies are not gone. They are there, lust, anger, greed in some proportion, and they keep lurking time to time. They keep coming and going. Yeah, yes.
The lingering.
Therefore, you hear sometimes your Vaishnava can get into some scandalous behavior. Or sometimes there can be ego clashes, ego tussles due to anger, or due to greed for, you know, taking away everything that others could have been given. Like there are some people who will want this facility, also that facility, this facility, and they will deprive others of that facility, isn't it? So due to greed, or due to pride, there are tussles also between people. People don't like anybody with pride. So, even though one may wear tilak and kantimala, the old vasanas may be lurking in the heart in this stage. It's not yet purified. Yeah.
The lingering taste for material enjoyment is the ghostly effect of past sins. Even in the midst of practicing sadhana, one is either tempted to commit these sins again or tortured by indecent thoughts, perhaps of past sexual encounters.
Yeah, this is called rasaswada. That somebody must have had certain sexual encounters to different degrees in the earlier part of life before coming to Krishna consciousness or from the Purva Janma also. So those thoughts may surge even during chanting. They may come to the surface and agitate the mind and senses. And then one will have to get rid of those thoughts. There is a kind of war. You want to get rid of the thought and the thought is pulling you down. Such a dirty thought is trying to drown you and you are trying to stay on the surface. So there is a kind of struggle with dirty sexual thoughts because of some past encounters. Yeah. So these are the five powerful enemies that causes unsteadiness. We have to go beyond them. Yeah.
Erratic. So
there is one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nayasya chittam bahirartha vibramam tamoguhayam chavishuddham avishat. So in that purport, our Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that that when one has come to the nishtha stage, then one is not disturbed by these two main problems. One is distraction and sleep, vikshepa and laya. One doesn't switch off from chanting and go to sleep, or one doesn't get distracted from one's chanting. So there he writes in his commentary. Yeah. Yeah.
Erratic behavior in beginning stages of devotion. Obstacles to steady practice will persist with decreasing strength until neophyte devotees' hearts are sufficiently purified. As weeds go to seed and proliferate, so these obstructions spread into the following.
Okay. Now, those five I told you now, those five are there in us, but these six stages which he is saying here, when we go through these things, we are unaware of those five problems, due to which we go through these six stages. Right now, at least theoretically, we know Nalaya, Vikshepa, Apratipati, Kashaya, Rasaswada. Those five, they are all due to lower gunas. Which are the two gunas? Tamoguna and Rajaguna. Like for example, Laya, Tamoguna tendency, and Vikshepa, Rajaguna. And this thing, apratipati, that's also rajaguna. Kashaya and rasaswada also rajaguna. Yeah, you know, kashaya is a mixture, tamoguna, rajaguna, kashaya. And rasa, because lust, anger, greed and all that. And last one, rasaswada is also rajaguna, sex life. So basically we are struggling with lower modes, unable to come to sattvaguna. But we are not aware now. When you go through this, you will see six kinds of erratic behavior. So, many of you have heard it. So, I will go straight to the next one, where it is elaborated a little bit. You can read this one. Elaboration of the six types of erratic behavior. Yeah.
First, false confidence.
Which is called utsahamayi. See, just like we say, bhakti, bhakti, abhas. Bhakti, abhas means semblance of devotion. looks like devotion, but it is not pure devotion. Similarly, utsaha, utsaha mayi. Utsaha mayi means it's false confidence. It's not actual enthusiasm. Yeah.
False confidence is the initial burst of enthusiasm felt by neophytes who, on learning a few devotional practices, thinks themselves masters of the science of bhakti. However, their childlike self-assurance fades and their devotional efforts become sporadic.
Yeah. So, in the Utsamaya stage, sometimes devotees while taking darshan or while hearing the kirtans, they even get tears in their eyes. And such emotions are possible occasionally. So, then one tends to think that probably, you know, the time is not much for me to meet Krishna very soon. That kind of, or somebody memorizes some shlokas and then very beautifully they recite in a very poetic way and they think, I remember so much, such complicated shlokas, long shlokas, I remember. So one becomes very proud of the chanting and the reciting of the shlokas and everything. And also there is a kind of pride that comes that, see, early morning I have gotten up and I am here for Mangalarti. The such and such friend has not come. I think he is a lazy fellow. He must be still sleeping. I will complain to the manager and wake him up. So, in this way, one feels very high about oneself and then one feels others are fallen. So, in this stage of newly found enthusiasm called Utsahamayi, one is very thrilled about spiritual life and everything appears like a bed of roses. Life looks very easy going and one feels very advanced. And one of the immediate things in Utsahamayi people will do, the greatest deadly thing they will do is to preach to their family members and relatives, to mother, father, friends, everybody very vigorously, and the new people also. Even before one gets any realization, one is very enthusiastic to preach without much understanding themselves, and therefore they cause a lot of damage also with the newly found enthusiasm. Yeah.
In this state, they are sometimes attentive in their devotional service and sometimes not.
Yeah. It's called ghana and tarala. Ghana means thick and tarala means thin, isn't it? Like for example, the water can be in the form of ice or water can be in the form of water. Correct, no? Similarly, you will find that practices that a neophyte does, someday he can chant 32 rounds. Another time, even 16 rounds will be a big struggle for him. The Kartik month comes, he will say, I will never touch sweets now. After 2 weeks, it will be very difficult for him. Seeing that all my friends are eating 4 sweets, let me take at least one. So, you will find that sometimes he is thick, sometimes he is thin. In his determination, it's like a sinusoidal wave. It goes up, down, up, down. It is not, it's very sporadic. Sometimes he thinks, I will rise early in the morning, 2 o'clock, and take bath and 2:30 to 4:30, you know, I will do reading of Bhagavatam. I heard in the lecture that early morning is very good. I will go on for a week. After 1 week, one will be sleeping till 4 o'clock. One won't get up before 4 o'clock. In this way, thick and thin. Next.
Face to face with the actual depth of their conditioning, such devotees become unsure how to situate themselves and struggle to make decisions. If they choose the grihastha ashram, the many arrangements to maintain family and home might distract them from their sadhana. If they try to practice renunciation, their intelligence tells them, your passions reveals you to be a hypocrite.
So here it's called Vyuda Vikalpa. In Vyuda Vikalpa, I have seen this happening even with the devotees between 30 to 40. Some of them feel that, if I have to change ashram after 40, then what? Life can be very difficult. Better change early. Because Shastra say that, you know, your wife is like a boat for the husband, or she is like a fort, you know, like a king is protected in a fort. Imagine a king is standing in the middle of a playground, anybody can attack him easily. But if there is a fort, he'll be protected. So, in case I marry, I'll be more safe and secure. Within grihastha ashrama, peacefully, husband and wife, we will practice together. And I don't want to do any other nonsense. We just want to advance together in spiritual life. And then the other side of the mind says, but as a brahmachari, I have so much opportunities for preaching, expanding, and I am carefree. Living in the ashrama, you get everything ready made. You know, prasadam is there, locker is there, accommodation is there, morning program is there, and you don't have to worry about, you know, wife, children. Ato griha kshetra sutta apta vitter janasya mohoyam aham ameti. Shastra says that also. Same Shastra says both things. Isn't it? And Bhagavatam, this verse also is there, and Bhagavatam only says that wife is like a safe fort for a husband. So one's mind is oscillating between the two, Vyuda and Vikalpa. What to do? So, and then another mind says, see, you already 36, 37. If you just cross, you know, 40, and then just focus on your devotion service fully, become 45 to 50. After that, people see you more like a father. You are an old man after that. Somehow can I pass it? And then the mind says, at the same time, Aishtika Brahmacharya, throughout life, I think it's a little difficult. You know, it may not be practical. It may not be possible. You know, what if I am struggling like at 40 to 43, 45, and I am Nagarka, Nagataka, I will be in between. So it is safer to accept grihastha ashrama. Like that the mind goes back and forth. So there is a desire to renounce the world and completely surrender our body, mind, words to Guru without looking back for anything. On the other hand, mind also considers that am I ready for such a thing? Because I also have certain needs. And the Shastras say that if you fulfill those needs, the mind becomes calm. And then one can practice peacefully. You heard about the two types of travelers, you know, who go to trekking. One traveler, you know, doesn't carry anything. He is ready to accept them on the way, whatever comes. Another traveler takes a lot of luggage. And both are peaceful. One is peaceful without luggage, one is peaceful with luggage. But the idea is that you should be peaceful for you to do devotion service, because that peaceful mind acts as a springboard to take you to the transcendence. Correct, no? So therefore the Vyudhavikalpa, his mind is oscillating between the, you know, whether I should be a, you know, lightweight traveler or a heavy traveler. So that is Vyudhavikalpa stage. Go ahead.
Wearied in battle with an enemy who remains on the offensive 24 hours a day, devotees become complacent and passively observe the mind and senses under the siege of temptation.
That is called Vishaya Sangra. So Vishaya Sangra means, Sangram is war, Vishaya means sense gratification. So they find that in the Brahmacharya Ashrama, one is not able to resist the temptations. One falls victim once, twice, thrice, four times, several times. One can become victim of opulent food. One can become victim of sleep. One can become victim of prajalpa. One can become victim of attraction for the opposite sex. One can become victim of name, fame, glory, popularity. One can become victim of, you know, there are many other alternative engagements for a brahmachari, like, you know, one can get into learning Sanskrit, learning music, learning Jyotish, learning Ayurveda, you know. And some people become a victim of, you know, reading too many books on health, health conscious. You can become Sanskrit conscious, health conscious, music conscious, you know. So many other things can preoccupy our mind. We can get distracted. And because of entering into different fields without doing devotion service properly, a person actually doesn't get nourishment for the soul. And then in this way, he is struggling with his senses and mind. And then he feels that, oh, you know, Brahmacharya Ashram is not very suitable for me. The struggle is too hard for me. You know, I am not able to be a simple devotee, chanting, dancing and reading Prabhupada books, going out on Harinam and lying in one corner. Simple sadhu life is not suitable. Like one brahmachari who left ashram was telling that, Prabhu, actually I know this is the best situation that you have provided for me. Such a beautiful morning program, Prabhu, beautiful brahmachari class, all wonderful Vaishnavas, nice prasadam, and all things are supplied, roti kapada makan, everything is supplied. But my mind feels that if I go out and show some success in the outside world, then only people will take me seriously. It is simply a trick of my mind, Prabhu. I know very well. Still, I am not able to say no to it. So, of course, he went a year ago. So there are people like that who go sometimes. So, they are facing Vishaya Sangra. They are fighting with the mind carrying vishayas, vishaya vasanas. Due to old vasanas from Purva Janma, this Janma also. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sometimes they resist temptation and sometimes they do not.
Yeah. If they are unable to, then they try to move to alternate position or something. Yes.
Although neophytes try to renounce thoughts of selfish pleasure, they are unable to do so. To gain strength, they vow to chant extra rounds, eat only once a day, fast completely on Ekadashi, sleep only 5 hours a night, and so on. But no matter how hard they try, they cannot sustain their vows and thus fail to make advancement.
Yeah, actually when they face struggle with the vishaya vasanas, they try to do all these things, different things that he is mentioning, chanting a lot of rounds, eating only once a day, and fasting on Ekadashi, all these things. They try. So the temptation can come in two ways. One is the gross pleasures, like gross things which I told you. And another subtlest thing is independent mentality. The subtlest desire is desire to be independent. I want privacy. I want to make my own arrangements. Me and my facility. I can be on my own. I don't have to oblige to somebody, right above, below whose nose I have to work. That's a subtlest type of desire for being independent. So, in this way, he struggles with many other things. But ultimately what happens? Finally, distracted by the superficial benefits of devotional service, wealth, position and respect, neophytes foolishly delight in these pleasures. Pleasures which are but mere ripples in the great ocean of pure devotion. Which is called Tarangarangini. Actually, because the temptations are there on one hand, imagine, for example, this fellow has the enjoying mentality. But at that time, lot of opportunities come for him. People are bringing their big posh car and say, Prabhu, please come to my home. You give wonderful lectures. Your kirtans are very wonderful. We are all fond of your association. Then people take him here, there. He is very happy to be recognized. He is very happy to be, rewarded with many gifts and facilities. And, like one Ramachari was telling, Prabhu, one family is calling me for seeing Mayapur Dham, they have 20-30 family members, only one family, like a joint family. Can I go? Yeah. I said, hey, you should not go alone. You should take one more brahmachari or some more brahmacharis with you. And I was telling, no, Prabhu, I will not take any money from the temple. They are ready to arrange a flight ticket. Yeah. I said, flight ticket everybody is getting nowadays. Flight has become like PMT bus now. It's not a very big thing to get. I said, they may give you a flight ticket to go even to Gulf or to America or London also nowadays. But we have to remain protected. It's very important. So therefore, sometimes a brahmachari thinks, oh, my value has increased. People are respecting me and my kirtan, my pravachan, my association. I am becoming a magnetic Vaishnava. People are attracted. So then I can do wonders. So that's called Tarangarangini. Yeah. This one.
Thrills and perils until one rises to steadiness.
Yeah.
These six facets of unsteady service are formidable enemies. They make the initial stages of Krishna consciousness more a battle with Maya than a dip into the ocean of ecstasy.
So therefore many people are not ready to pay the price. He's saying the early stage of Krishna consciousness. Especially early stage means what? Our stage only. We are not talking about a very newcomer. A very newcomer gets a lot of ecstasy in the beginning. Because that is like innocent. He thinks he is a pure devotee and he thinks everybody else is pure devotee. Such people I have seen when they come in a temple hall, not only for Prabhupada, they will offer obeisances to every devotee. Even all the pillars, all the pictures on the wall, everybody they will offer obeisances. They are very innocent fellows or ignorant fellows. So, but then after that comes the phase, which is our phase, where he says that it's more a battle with Maya, due to those anarthas I explained just now. Utsahamayi, Ganatarla, Vyoda Vikalpa, Vishaya Sangra and all those things, Tarangarangini and all that. So then, so when you go through the Utsahamayi up to Ganatarla, as we, sorry, utsahamayito vishaya sangra. Those things are happening because of the previous anarthas which we said, five anarthas. Correct, no? Laya, kashaya and all those things. So these are all stages of unsteady devotion service. Yeah. Next para.
Still, the overall picture is neither bleak nor hopeless. A higher taste is available to all devotees. There is greater joy in tasting the auspiciousness, shubhada, and freedom from suffering, kleshagni, that come from devotional service at any stage of practice.
Yeah. So you know, kleshagni, the chanting of the holy name destroys the kleshas. Correct, no? It destroys the sinful reactions, even the prarabdha karma. Gradually it destroys prarabdha also. So in this way, and also shubhada has four aspects, you all know. You know, shubhani prinanam sarva jagatam anuraktata sadguna sukham ityadi. The first one is says shubhani prinanam sarva jagatam. And all the people in the world love a devotee. They deal with devotee in a very loving way. And also jagatam anuraktata. Actually he loves the people because he likes to preach to people and make them devotees. He sees everybody as Krishna's children. And then the people are also attracted to your devotees carrying devotional potency. And sadguna, all good qualities start manifesting in the body of the devotee. And sukham, he experiences sukham beyond, you know, earthly, heavenly and even mukti or siddhi and all that. So depending on our surrender, we experience little portions of this happinesses also. So he says, therefore, bhakti is not a very troublesome path in that sense. Although there is internal struggle, externally we are also getting many plus points for continuing. Yes.
Furthermore, chanting Hare Krishna and preaching the philosophy give unparalleled happiness. These joys entice beginners forward and reassure them with glimpses of auspiciousness of perfection. Determined devotees thus remain inspired even while they struggle toward Krishna's lotus feet. They cultivate proper knowledge, guard against the pitfalls caused by their own shortcomings, and with patience and determination gradually rise to the stage of steadiness.
So the key word is determined devotees. That means one shouldn't get frightened seeing these anarthas popping up. One should know this is a part of the process and I have to go through to become a steady devotee. It will take time. So we need three qualities: utsahan, nishchayat, dhairyat. You need all the three. Yeah. I think this is the last slide, I think. Yeah, yes.
10. Neophytes should be alert not to succumb to handicaps of their station to avoid adding new obstacles to existing ones. It is important to note that the stages of unsteady practice, anishtita bhajana kriya, and the removal of unwanted habits, anartha nivritti, go on concurrently.
Yeah. See, Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, you say, what is that Bhajana Kriya? Anishtita. Because right now there is no Nishtha, steadiness in that. Unsteady Bhajana Kriya. And then, Anartha Navriti. After that, Nishtita Bhajana Kriya. Because that Bhajana Kriya is done with Nishtha, steady. So that means Anartha Navriti and Anishtita Bhajana Kriya will go hand in hand. Keep on going till the Anarthas are cleansed. Yeah.
Although devotional activities done at the unsteady stage have limited potency,
like for example chanting, taking darshan of the deities, eating prasad, preaching, all these are tinged with our false ego, they are tinged with our anarthas and, you know, false expectations and everything. Still, nevertheless, we can't say they are useless. Not that they just produce only ajna sukriti. Besides ajna sukriti, they also produce some progress. Yeah.
They are still agents to help neophytes give up most of their unwanted habits.
Like the Prabhupada says in his lecture, yeah.
The complete removal of unwanted habits happens only after devotees pass through the stage of attachment.
That means asakti is after nishtha comes ruchi and then asakti. In asakti stage all are clear except offenses. Everything else is cleared in the stage of asakti, yeah.
And enter the realms of ecstasy and love. If, however, neophytes are not alert to correcting themselves, and if they succumb to the handicaps of their station.
Station means in whichever level we are in. Or in bhajana kriya, or in utsahamai ganatarala, vyadukalpa. Wherever we are, we have to, in those stages, we have to keep correcting ourselves. Yeah.
then the very acts of devotion meant to free them from obstacles create even greater ones. In other words, devotional service, the means to overcome all impediments to joyful life, if improperly performed, can be the source of more obstacles and sorrow. These newly created obstacles add to the store of unwanted habits and make the next stage of devotion, anartha nivritti, even more difficult to complete.
So this requires explanation. See, this next class we are going to discuss Nishithachar Kotinati Jiva Himsana and then Pujala Pratishta Upashakadi Gana. So when the creeper is growing, devotional creeper, side by side what is also growing? Weeds. So during the chanting, if I am either dozing or if I am getting distracted or if I am committing one of the 10 offenses, then instead of while talking to somebody, while watering the creeper, what I may water? The weeds I may water. And the weeds may grow bigger than the actual plant. And they may pose a great difficulty. They may even choke the plant also. It's quite possible. And that's what he is saying. So therefore, if apradhanam actually makes our spiritual life more complicated. So one devotee was asking me, why is that so, Prabhuji? I am at least chanting the holy name. Why the water should go to the weeds? And then apradhanam causing more complexity. So try to understand a simple example, I'll tell you. Say, right now, a boy is jobless after his engineering. He is searching for a job. Now he got a job in a company. Once he gets a job in a company, he enters into a contract. In company, one thing he can do is do his service well in the company, win the heart of the boss, and he will get promoted. Correct? Or in company, he did not do the job well, he committed many mistakes and everything. So he may not be promoted, he may continue in the same level. Or he did many blunders in the company, wasting the resources of the company, and the company may throw him out also. Correct, no? All three possibilities are there. He goes up, or is stagnant, or he is removed from the company. Or he is demoted from the company to a lower post. That is also possible. Four possibilities we have. Same thing in devotional service also. You will see that, you know, if somebody is watering the creeper, if while watering the creeper, if you are watering the unwanted weeds, they grow and they choke, which means our promotion in spiritual life is choked. And then if we don't remove the weeds, then we are stagnated. And if we allow the weeds to grow bigger and bigger, keep on doing namaparad again and again, we are even demoted. And demoted means what? The bhakti progress we made, that is hidden, kept aside. And then lot of other problems make us appear that instead of spiritual life, instead of going up, we are going down. Hey, you know, 3-4 years ago I was better, now I have become worse, you feel. That is mainly because what happens, the advancement made is kept like a lost checkbook. And now many other unwanted weeds have grown up like that. Or if you commit aparadhas, hatimata aparadha, then we are thrown out practically. Then it's like the creeper is trampled by elephant. So it's very similar, just like when you join a company for a job, you enter into a contract with the company. Same when we are beginning chanting holy name after taking initiation. It's a contract we have taken with Krishna and we have to fulfill that contract properly. So, therefore, Maharaj is saying here that when you are neophytes, we should not succumb to the handicaps. And why are we knowing all these different stations? By knowing them, we should take caution and care that we are making an effort constantly to remove those five misgivings. One shouldn't carelessly chant, or one shouldn't carelessly hear the class, or one shouldn't carelessly perform devotion service. Taking it very seriously will help us to grow faster, and then once you come to Nishtha, you can breathe peacefully. Now, after Nishtha, then the ruchi is very soon coming, the ecstasy. Therefore, you will find if somebody is ecstatic after, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, he is still like ecstatic in spiritual life. That means the waves of ruchi are awarded to the devotee. It's not like a first, you know, first year devotee or second year devotee who is jumping in the kirtan. If somebody is, even after 50 years, there are many proper disciples who are going on. You can see them. That means they have crossed the nishtha, they have gone to the ruchi, asakti stage. Then they have become very stable and steady in the devotion service, which is also our ambition. Shri Prabhupada ki, Bhakta Vrinda ki.